curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Solnes here with Ron Kitchens.
Hey, Carla.
How are you today, Ron?
I am awesome.
I love hearing that. So, Ron, we're going to switch things up today. And so instead of the listening audience hearing from you and I, today we're going to be showcasing an episode that we did here live in Kalamazoo with a panel. And it was a really fun panel. It was called Leading Ladies. It was one session of a First Leaders Breakfast series that we offer here locally. And we had an opportunity to hear from some amazing female leaders in this community, including Anita Maeda from Stryker Corporation, Kathy Beauregard, who's the athletic director at Western Michigan University.
One of eight in the nation female athletic directors.
Which is amazing. Also heard from Amy McLean from PNC Bank and Danielle Anderson from Miller Canfield. And they were on a panel discussion really to talk about their leadership journey as women, primarily in male-dominated fields. So it was a very fascinating conversation. What did you take away from this, Ron?
I was hesitant to have a segregated panel. And you and several other team members, all women, convinced me that it was important to do, and it was incredible. So the audience for the event, although we opened it up to our typical audience, but about 120 people in the room, and were the vast majority were women that we didn't know who were hungry for knowledge and to hear from amazing women leaders. And it was, I actually felt a little awkward being the only man on the stage. I thought we should have had Carla up here doing this interview. As much as I like it, it was amazing. They were raw and real. And, you know, we'll have people stay after a speech, but I think it was about an hour, hour and 20 minutes afterwards of the audience members hanging out to talk to these ladies who have now become mentors for that audience. So, you know, I hope it transfers just on audio as amazing as it was in person.
So we're going to share with you the first part of this series. We're going to break it into two podcasts. I can't wait for the listening audience to hear the insights from these amazing women, and they'll get a chance to hear the rest of it in another week.
What's the one characteristic you believe that every leader should possess, and who's an example of that?
I feel, honestly, a strong sense of self-belief. I think that if you believe in yourself, actually, you have to believe in yourself in order to lead in your own life, in your work, with your team. And having that strong sense of self-belief is the level of confidence that you have. And you have to have strong confidence. We rely a lot on our teams every day. We ask a lot of our teams every day. And in order to really withstand that, you have to be able to know that you can do it. And it all starts here, and it starts here, honestly. So you have to every day constantly feed yourself that energy and give yourself that time. Because in order to lead, you know, you have to know that you can do it. So I think a strong sense of self-belief is really important. One person for me, I don't know if anyone's heard of Ursula Burns. Does anyone know that name? Yes. So she's an amazing woman. I've been reading about her and I've been listening to her. She currently is the CEO of Xerox, and she immigrated here from Panama. She grew up in the projects in New York, and she was raised by a single mother. And that woman started as an intern at Xerox in 1980, and two decades later, she became the CEO of Xerox. She has an incredible journey and incredible story. And without her self-belief, she would not be where she is today.
Awesome. For me, it's emotional intelligence. It's knowing how to self-regulate not only your emotions, but be able to be in tune as a leader with those of others and to interpret them and know what's going on with other people even before they're able to tell you. But it starts with me. It starts with me being able to see it in others and be able to sort of regulate the emotion, the self-control within myself.
Who's great at that?
You know, interestingly, and she hasn't had a talk show in a bit, but I would say Oprah, frankly. If you look back at a lot of the interviews and things that she did, you can feel what's happening and how she's sort of absorbing the emotion has compassion for the folks that she's dealing with, whether she's doing volunteer work or doing some of the interviews and things that she did. But I would say Oprah.
And I would talk about the fact that it's really important for me to understand what energy I actually projecting and the amount of energy that I project in the job and in the circuit, whatever the issues happen to be. And then actually what energy am I emitting or who is emitting that energy to me? I have to stay around positive people. In our world today, it's just, gosh, you know, noise that you just want to turn down because it's just negative, 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 negative. And you find yourself and people kind of, you can start great at them. I used to be a news person in the morning. I would start out my day with that. I don't do it anymore because there's just nothing like that gets me going when I actually watch that. So I think being around positivity and certainly watching those that are around you that bring you down or who you want to spend time with or how can you help to bring them back up positively. And very honestly, I would say the same thing. I have not had women in my business to really be mentors or to have individuals in intercollegiate athletics, specifically across the country. Not only am I one of the seven women, but at the time I was really one of the only with a husband and child. So when you looked, literally you'd go to meetings, you'd go to places. My husband would get all these nice letters about wear your nice shoes because we're going to go on a shopping day as the spouse. It's really got big. Didn't look great. He didn't look like I was so great in those heels. So, and then the same thing with the other. So there are all those pieces. So I would find it's hard for me to kind of pinpoint a person, but it's just positive. It actually opened with somebody all along for me too. It'd kind of be at the end of the day, you could hear or watch or see or some of those things. Yeah. I think she was one that could do that too.
Absolutely. She transcended generations and all sorts of different categories. So for me, it's humility. I feel like when I think about the leaders that inspire me and the leaders that I've been impressed by, you know, there are certain traits that they're organically going to have because they made it to that level, right? They're smart. They have some level of emotional intelligence, hopefully. That's a really good one. But to me, if they remain humble through all that, that's the kicker. And when I thought about who to name as that leader for me, I thought a little closer to home. And for those of you here from Stryker, I promise you, I really gave this thought because I didn't want my answer to sound cheesy, but honestly, it's our CEO. If you've ever interacted with Kevin Lobo, CEO of our company, he is all of the things that were mentioned on this panel and has a level of humility and a level of collaboration. Now, don't get me wrong, he can make a quick decision when it's needed, but he brings a breath of fresh air to our organization throughout all this change and everything else. So,
great answers. So what is the one behavior that you believe you see most often that derails a leader's career?
Well, go ahead. Honestly, I would say consistency. That is something that we're seeing that has, to me, derailed many strong leaders because they're not consistent. You have to be consistent in your message. You have to be consistent in your actions, in your values. You can't change that and expect your team to continue to do what you're saying and not what you're doing. You have to be consistent. And I think a lot of our leaders today, and what I've seen just over the years, it's the consistency that they didn't keep up, and that is what derailed them.
And I would say it is absolutely being the leader you are. Don't try to be the leader somebody else is because they smell right through it.
Yep.
So it's exactly like, I'll give you like an example. If those of you in the day of Bobby Knight in basketball, we also had a basketball coach at one time, whether that was his personality or not, but he thought he coached with him. That's exactly who he needed to be and emulate him and do it. And it didn't work. And I think all of us have been around people that think, well, I'm going to...
silly auto parts.
Yeah. But it's really, you have to be who you are from inside. Yeah. And I'm telling you, they can tell it. Part of that is being the same person, but it's ethics, it's morals, which are, they might be swear words these days because you just don't hear them enough, feel them enough, see them enough. But underneath, you need to feel it, believe it. Who you are is who you are. Don't try to lead and be somebody that you really aren't from within. Not that we can't change, not that we can't, you know, handle the situations differently, but I think everyone will tell you what they know. Kathy, one way when it's an issue, I don't like surprises. I mean, I don't like, so a different Kathy might come out in a leadership way that way than one as we're moving along. But I think it's really important. You are who you are. We're able to learn, grow, change, And hopefully that's for the betterment of who you are and what you're leading. But that to me is really, really important.
Agreed, totally. Being your authentic self, you'll build trust that way. People will know what to expect from you. You can't fake it. You can't. So being your authentic self and leading, staying true to your values, the expectations you set for others should be the same expectations that you set for yourself.
And I would say perfectionism. And by that, I mean striving for perfection, because it can be paralyzing. If you're so afraid to make a decision for fear that it's going to be the wrong one, you're doing it wrong. You have to be willing to make those mistakes to move forward. You're probably going to learn more from the mistake than you would have by just sort of getting by and making another decision. But if you wait until you feel like something is perfect, you've probably missed your opportunity for whatever it was that you were trying to do.
So Sheryl Sandberg, I think in LinkedIn, said, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm sure I'm getting it wrong, but when you're offered a seat on the bus, don't ask which seat, just get on the bus. And I think that goes to that perfectionism thing. But is there, and this is one of those questions that's not fair, but I'm going to ask anyway because I don't know how else to get it. Is there a difference? So you all manage men. You all have come up in predominantly male businesses. And is there a difference? Is there a secret behind the boardroom door thing that women have to know that's leading different than the advice you would give to your sons or give to men that worked for you?
Oh, that's
good.
I have to tell you, you know, you bring up a really important fact. And it is true. And I know we have many women in here and we have a lot of gentlemen in here. And for me personally, I feel you have to own your own happiness. You have to own your own happiness. What you believe in, what you put in is how you are and how you act. And it is difficult. I know that all of us up here have probably encountered a few times. And I remember personally, I used to go in with a room full of men and I would have to present. And I would sometimes be so nervous, like I felt I wasn't strong enough. And I honestly got to the point where I said, it's time for me to own my own happiness. And I believe every day, and I say this to my team all the time, you win the morning and you win the day. That's the way I look at it. You start in the morning, and it's to everybody's point up here. I don't start by looking at my phone. I don't watch the news. I get up in the morning and I feed myself physically, do exercise, and then mentally. But it's very important for you to own your own happiness. And I think if you can do that, when you walk in that room, no matter who's in there, you know who you are and you know your value. And that will get you through.
I'm not even sure where to start on this one. Other than my first meetings that I went to when I became an athletic director, the best part about it is there were only 7 of us in the bathroom and the men's room had a line. So that was really cool to think, wow, look at this. And then you're like, okay, that's not really what you want it to be.
That's like an episode of The Office.
I still say we have a sitcom. We could still try to do the sitcom here. But one of the things, I'll give you a visual. One of the times I ended up with, when I first became the AD, there weren't many women in the NCAA either. It was all a men-run organization. Everybody can say what they want. The only reason they let the women in is because they realized they could make some money off of championships on women's sports now instead of necessarily just on the men's side. So they may have talked equity and all of that, but in the NCAA, it was really about dollars. I'd like to say there were some other good reasons, but that's really what that is. So I actually was one of the first women who served on the NCAA Football Bowl Certification Committee. So I get to go, and there's like 8 of us in the room, and all in the room are former famous football players, athletic directors that had turned, football coaches that all had about 7 championship rings on each finger. And I'm walking in that room. So it was very interesting. What I had done ahead of time is really study the group. So I kind of studied the group, and I said, okay, with this group, who am I going to sit next to? And who am I going to interact with a little bit differently by being next to than necessarily in the other areas? So sometimes those things are really important for you to do. And I went through a time when you could fight for Title IX. You could fight for a lot of different. I'm thankful for all the women ahead of me that did that. And it's awesome today. I can talk to our athletes. The only Title IX thing they know now is the other part of Title IX we're only hearing about when it comes to the, you know, sexual violence piece. But the equity for women, they don't have any idea that I never had a chance to play a sport when I was growing up. And so there's others in the room the same way. So that's good, but then don't forget that history. So the other part I really found is pick and choose your battles. That's what I would really tell you throughout my career that was really important. There were sometimes I really had to pick and choose, but I made sure they were not only on the women's issues. So you needed to pick the women's issues. You needed to talk about diversity. You needed to talk about inclusion. You needed to talk about you. You needed to be, and I made subjects are kind of what I took on to basically kind of manage or challenge or to fight for different reasons. So that honestly, I felt that I was gaining respect about the fact that when they first thought, oh, a woman's going to come in and all she wants to do is do this. So since then, I will tell you, probably I work with more women, definitely even in my own operation, than women. And we need to continue to grow that. That's another part of change and growing. There should not be any reason why there aren't as many women sitting at the table. And sometimes I just say, just treat us all, even though we are different and special, but treat us as if this, for the, you know, treat us the same way. Don't expect us to be different.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Sheryl Sandberg, the CEO of Facebook. I read a quote that she said, and it was to your point. She said, one day, you know, right now we have women leaders and we talk about men leaders. One day it's just going to be leaders. There's going to be no difference. And when I read that quote, it really stuck to me. And we're looking forward to that. And it's I mean, we are definitely making progress. I mean, look at all of us here. Look at all of you in the room. We're making that progress.
I just saw data last night. 58% all college students today are women.
There you go.
The graduation rate's actually much higher than that. We get in the mid-60s for graduation. So clearly we are, I think, one generation from the tip, one more kind of turn of the wheel. So.
So you're proud of yourself.
So we're back
everybody
to that change, which is where we started to begin with.
Yeah.
Anita, your thoughts?
So I would say probably the first decade of my career at Stryker, whether I was dealing with our surgeon customers or management team or sales force, I was typically the only woman in the room or at the event, trade show, whatever it may be. And so many times I had conversations with myself around, it's a medical device. This is what it is. It's a male-dominated field. You chose to be here. You love your job, so figure it out. Right. Because there's a balancing line between sticking with your personal values, being your authentic self, and being emotionally aware of how you're being perceived with those different groups and how you're interacting with them. I'm happy to say today it's not that situation. And I don't have those conversations with myself. To Amy's point, I think we've made a ton of progress. About advice I would give, I definitely think it's different for girls and boys. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and the advice that I would give her today is very different than when I think back to the beginning of my career, which is a really good thing. If she went into corporate America, my advice would be around owning your career, right? Don't wait for somebody else to lay that path for you. If there's something you want, go for it. Whether it's an international assignment, whether it's trying a new job that maybe you don't have experience in, to just be fearless in that sense. And I don't know where she's going to end up yet. She's very artsy, so I don't know if she's going to end up in corporate America, but I'll have to figure out the advice for the other side of it. Should we end up somewhere more liberal? I don't know.
Danielle?
I agree with Kathy about picking your battles. Not only picking your battles, but picking the time and the place to have them if you're going to choose to take something on in particular. When I first started practicing law, I would show up for depositions, and I'm a trial lawyer at heart. I would show up for depositions, and people would assume that I was the court reporter. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I walked in with a briefcase. I'm not like dragging my, you know, they don't really use those anymore. They just sort of tape record. But, you know, that was 20 years ago, and it's changed a lot. But there are still the times and places, and even partners within my firm, there will be assumptions made that I'm getting the coffee. Or if there's copies to be made, or so-and-so just arrived, can you walk out and greet them? Those are conversations that I will have privately with those individuals later, right? Yeah. Thick skin, very important at the time, because you will get your moment to have those conversations, but do it wisely.
So questions from you all?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So, Anita, you gave the advice that you would give your daughter now, but what about from 12 years ago? Let's say she was 12, 12 years ago.
Yeah, the advice would be different. It would definitely be more protectionist, I guess, more around when I think back then, you still have to make choices for yourself, but it would definitely be more protectionist about, you know, self-protection and making sure she's making wise choices. And again, being, I cannot put enough value on emotional intelligence. If you've not read a book or gone through a course on emotional intelligence, I highly recommend that. It will give you the keys to the kingdom, figuring out not only how you react to situations, but identifying how other people are reacting to you, and then you can adjust, even if you're midstream.
That is first has covered. And we offer that seminar, so.
Yeah. Here we go. If you haven't taken that course, I highly recommend it. But the advice would be different, you know, than today, where I think the conversations are more open. And I think, frankly, I hope that the women today that are starting their careers aren't dealing with the same issues. So it's just a very different time frame, at least. And in my perspective, I've been at Stryker for almost 20 years. So my perspective is medical device and that type of a company. So I'm coming at it from that angle. It could be different in other industries and with other companies, for sure.
So let me ask a question that's on. So one of our core beliefs at Southwest Michigan First is that ignorance is the enemy. And we mean ignorance in the form of you just don't know what you don't know. And so unless somebody helps you, that burdens you with knowledge, then ignorance drives your decision-making. So let's pretend that all these women are out of the room and it's a room full of men who are struggling with, in today's world, what are the rules in dealing with women? So I work with, none of them are here this morning, they're doing the work, but you know, my management team that I work with, there's six of us and five of them are women, and they regularly go, you know, let me give you a mulligan on that, because I don't think that is what you mean, but ignorance is in the way for you. So what advice would you give to men today, either managing and lifting up amazing women to lead organizations? Because if you can't do that, your organization is going to die. Or how to deal in parity with women leaders. What are the mistakes they're making? What are those? You know, it's one of those things that I think most problems we have in the workforce are lack of communications, not malice. And in malice, you got to go, but lack of communications, we can do something about. So what advice would you give men in those scenarios, which was really a terrible question? I just babbled.
I think you hit on a really great point while you were actually asking the question.
I'll point it out
for you. So the great point is, because you asked specifically advice for men, when a woman says something to you like, I don't think you meant it that way, but this is how I received it, to be open-minded about it. It's not about, again, what you did wrong. It's about understanding, again, the emotional intelligence, right? How did the room perceive what you said? Did the men perceive it differently than the women? And just take the feedback. Nobody knows everything. None of us know everything either. Nobody's claiming to handle every situation perfectly. But again, for the male leader, when you can approach it with that humility and that open-mindedness to just listen and digest the information, you know, I think that's a great starting point.
And I also think having a man look at me for my value, having him respect me in the room, in my opinion, and my voice for my skills, and for what I bring to the table. Don't look at me because I'm a woman. I want to sit in that room and sit at that table and add the value just like you because I'm educated, because I know the information, because I can actually add value and I'm a part of this team. And I would just ask them to just give me that opportunity.
And so tell me something that a man could do, and I know we're generalizing and it's unfair and all that, but every guy in here who's married has heard this comment. I don't need you to solve the problem. I just need you to listen to me. So other than that issue, what can men do to convey that I'm listening and I value you and you've earned your place in the room that they don't do well now?
Actually, to me, it's very simple. Just be quiet and listen. I mean, to be honest, right? It's really not that difficult. When I'm talking, respect me enough like I respect you to listen and then to really understand it, process it, and speak not out of emotion, not out of your personal. You know, we all have that personal side, and sometimes it overpowers us. We got to put the personal aside. We need to make sure we speak out of fact and not speak out of emotion. And to be honest, I would just ask, just listen. Just give me those 5 minutes and respect me and listen. It's really not that difficult to me, but I'm on the other side, right? I'm not on the male side. I don't know. It might be nice to get some voices. I'm looking at you all over there. It might be nice to get some you know, but on my side, to me, it really isn't that difficult.
Yeah, I saw some data the other day that said in male-female communication that 60% of the perception of listening was through the eyes. People not just don't want you to sit there and be quiet looking at your phone. Right. I want you to look at
respect
me in the face.
Yes.
Let me know that you hear me with your eyes, and then know that I hear you with your ears.
It goes a long way.
I think sometimes when I'm maybe my senior leadership team, and my style is to look at positives and the potential negatives or the downfalls of a decision-making process. And the way I do that is analyze that. Listen, get input, gather. And I have some of my staff basically believe I do that because I'm a woman, not because that's how I make decisions. But sometimes I'll say, okay, appreciate all the input. I want to look at the pros, the cons, know what we have. Some of them I'm always like, oh, here we go again. This woman is gone. And then the next thing she's going to say is, let me sleep on it and bring it back tomorrow. Where some of them are like maybe more. But it's not, I don't believe it's because I'm a woman. I believe it's my decision-making
style.
Because
you're a good leader?
Yeah.
There's that confidence.
So I just think that that's just my style.
Yeah.
And it may not be how those in the room would lead. But to me, I think I would tell you that many of them believe that we analyze probably situations more effectively. And it's not like I'm going to hold. I mean, I'll make decisions right away too. But there are so many different pieces of a puzzle sometimes that you just, or I may want to check with one other person that's not in the room before I make that final decision. But it isn't just because I'm a woman and I overthink.
Right.
Which is what some men really, oh God, we should just give us an answer.
And I agree with that decision-making in terms of I'm someone that processes. I want all of the information. I need time to process it. And while I'm sitting there, I'm probably not making a decision. And I don't think it's a gender issue, but I completely agree that that is perceived as a gender issue. It is more of a personality and leadership style, in my opinion.
Wow, that was incredible. And we're only 25 minutes in. It really is translating to as powerful as it was when we're in the room together.
I am so excited that we were able to share this with the listening audience and to personally be able to listen to it live. Part two has even more wisdom, so stay tuned for that. We'll share that with you next week. And we're just excited to continue to hear from these amazing women leaders on their journeys.
Thanks for listening to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.